Hello and welcome to the Villa Park podcast. It's me, Rich, and I'm back with the match reaction for Tottenham Hotspur 1, Aston Villa 2. I'm not going to be on my own all night. I've got George jumping on shortly and Kev will be joining us. But I didn't want to leave you guys waiting because we've got to bask in the glory of this victory. We've got to bask in the glory of being in the top four. 2 points off the top of the table. And what a game it was. I mean, full of incident, full of intensity. Showed all elements of what Villa are all about. Before we get going, though, bits of housekeeping for you all. Please do hit that like button. Please do hit that subscribe button. Help us on the road to 3K. We've surpassed 2,700 already, so we're well on the way. We want to hit it before Christmas. You guys can get us there. And at the top of the chat, I've pinned at the top of the chat the link to become a member. It's just $1.99 a month to become an official Villa Park Pod follower, and you will be included in the draw to win one of the special calendars from AstonVillaShirts.co.uk that I've got an extra. I bought a couple of calendars, one for you guys potentially to win. So we're going to draw that very soon. So do have to be in with a chance. Do click the link, become a member of the channel, and you will go into the prize draw. I have a man as well who was at the game. He was on the other night with his mate. And I'm sure Shaz will not be happy. But Sam is very, very happy. How are you doing, my mate?
Oh, I'm good, mate. How are you?
Pleasant surprise. I wasn't sure if you'd get on as well, to be fair.
Oh, long trip back from London, if I'm being honest. But it's definitely one you don't want to miss, is it?
Absolutely not, mate. Absolutely not. We've got loads in the chat already. Lewis in the house. Good evening, all. Great result today. Didn't play great, but who cares? It's all about the points. Duncan, good evening, mate. Great to have you in. Lee says six-pointer. Check, check. Dale says, evening all, great. We're not the best first half, but great teams win games like this. Something we haven't done before. Up the Villa, 100%. We're going to get into all of that. Fishy attacks. Hey, Rich. Yeah. Hello, mate. Great to have you in. Evening, everyone. Good evening, Rob. Great to have you on. Mark as well in the house. Amazing work with the thumbnails as well, mate. You just fired them all out ready for this week. So cracking stuff. Cracking result, best result of the season, along with the 6-1 Brighton win, says Dunk. Gary said, hi, Rich, win of the season for me, especially after such a poor start. Gary said he's Shaz over it yet. Yeah, we will come to that. We will come to that, Sam. We'll come to that. Good evening, Michael. Great to have you in. Lewis said, tell Sam Watkins scored again. Deontay said, happy Sunday, everyone. This should now be a podcast for top four clubs only. Exactly. Weston's in the house. This is what happens when you employ a top manager. The levels have gone up tenfold under Emery. And Paul is in the house, and he might even be joining us for the fans forum tomorrow night. Fantastic result, definitely top four finish. And another gentleman who was at the game today, George, how are you feeling, mate, after such a wonderful victory?
Evening, guys. Yeah, absolutely buzzing, mate. What a time to be alive. That's all I've got to say about it.
And you may well have had a couple of pints as well, so this is going to be tasty.
Guys.
Fantastic, fantastic. And why not? Why not? And we've got Mr. KTAVFC as well. Maybe he's buzzing for the result, Kev, but still not 100% happy with the performance, do we say that?
I've had a little bit of a personality transplant, I think. Something's happened to me, because I'm normally yeah, woo! And we're in the top four. Emery's an absolute genius. You know, we beat Spurs away again, but, you know, that first half performance after Liverpool, after Newcastle, it worries me. I'm just thinking, it's that nagging worry that's there for me now. And I just think that, yeah, it's really good, but are we going to come unstuck by playing as abjectly as we did in that first half? It wasn't just bad. It was absolutely effing awful. And there was a lot of people that were massively off it. And, hey, it's a mark of a great team to win when you've not played very well. I like that. But that I don't see Man United back in the day or Man City recently play as terribly as that and then come out of it. So I'm just a bit worried, and I'm just being that from an honest perspective, but obviously the result was absolutely wonderful. Wonderful.
Exactly, exactly. Well, we're going to get into it. We're going to get as many of your comments in as we possibly can. Ricky's absolutely buzzing as well. Dale saying 2 points off top sounds even better. Exactly, exactly. So, look, I think we'll come to, like, general kind of performance in Emery. We'll obviously talk all of the moments in the game. We'll talk certain players' performances, both positive and negative, and certain impacts as well. But Sam, being at the game, when you saw the starting lineup, obviously Diego Carlos coming in, Matty Cash playing in that more advanced role, were you any surprises for you? Were you kind of, or were you fairly thinking that was maybe where Emery was going to go?
No, I didn't see that one coming, if I'm being honest. I think Yuri Tielemans has been playing really well recently. I didn't see Carlos coming in, if I'm being honest. I don't really like Matty Cash on the right and Consor at right back. I didn't get it at the time, but it was one of those trust in Emery moments. I'm sure he knows what he's doing. I think ultimately it didn't. I don't know if it worked that well, but I think in the first instance, I was a little bit surprised to see Tielemans not on the pitch.
I totally agree. I mean, it was we've done it before. Obviously, we did that. We did the same thing against Wolves. I think we did the same thing against Burnley. But George, being in that away end, seeing the kind of the start of the game, we had one or two attacks, but I think I'll put it in the group chat, Tottenham will go at us from word go and go all out. And that's what happened. I mean, how are you feeling kind of the way that Tottenham approached the game from being in the away end?
Yeah, thoroughly impressed with Tottenham, to be fair, first half. Their intensity was just off the scale. It was like when we played at Liverpool, you know, when they just blasted us off the pitch in half an hour. It's kind of what we tried to do at home. But they really did turn it on us first half. We were struggling to deal with it. And to be fair, we were, you know, I know how the first half went eventually, but we were lucky not to be out of sight. Spurs could have been out of sight in 15, 20 minutes there. You know, we just couldn't deal with Tottenham's. They were quick, weren't they? Fit, quick, intense. And we were just trying to hang on in there, you know. And yeah, luckily we did.
Yeah. Kev, I mean, Kulusevski, Son, Brennan Johnson, Bentancur driving forward, Udogie picking up this like position from left back, who was almost their most attacking player. It was almost like they were attacking us from all angles.
Yeah, it really was. It really was. And obviously they've got a real, you know, as was talked about a lot, a real injury crisis at the moment, and obviously a few suspensions too. We thought we were going to cash in terms of, you know, the fact that we...
No pun intended.
I nearly made that gag myself, but yeah, basically he didn't get anywhere near cashing in today, did he? So, but of course we kind of got used to our injuries, if you know what I mean. Our injuries were early season. We knew about, you know, Ramsey and Moreno, and we found out just before the start of the season, and then obviously on the first game about Mings and Buendia. So we've had a chance to get used to that, and they've obviously had they've been recent. So I thought based on what happened in previous away games, we saw the formation that we played, the lineup. I thought we'd be a bit more solid, but you've got to give them credit. And of course, the sad passing of Terry Venables would have meant they probably would have been even more up for it than they would under Big Ange anyway. So, and maybe it's to be expected. Maybe we've got to be realistic about it. When you play teams like Newcastle, Liverpool, Spurs, etc. away, even some of the lesser teams, you know, under the lights, you know, busy, you know, exciting, hostile atmosphere, that you have got to somewhat weather the storm. Well, we did weather the storm today, but there was a point when I just thought the storm was going to absolutely engulf us to the point where if it had been two or three, then I think it might have been a bit too much.
Yeah. So, I've just got to quickly let my wife in the house. But Sam, as Kev's just said there, you know, the chances that Spurs had, like Son missing, I guess, a gilt-edged chance putting it over the bar, one or two other opportunities, and then the goal from Lo Celso, I mean, 22 minutes, I think it was. It was definitely coming from that start.
Yeah, for sure. I don't know if you want to walk and go and get... Yeah, he's going to go and get let his wife in. yeah, I think it was, I don't know about you boys, but the chances that Spurs had were just so fluid. Like, they actually play really nice football. We're very similar teams as well, I think, where, you know, in terms of the passing play, building up, playing on the wing and bringing it back inside. And Son had a chance. It was actually, I don't know if you saw it, George, because it was on our side, but it was kind of pulled just a little bit behind. The ball was played a little bit behind Son. And he obviously went over the bar, but I think he might have been offside anyway.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't offside.
No. I think the flag might have gone up on our side. So
I think the guy before was offside. The pass whoever crossed
it. Before was offside. Yeah, maybe. But it was just. It was funny as well, because then when their goal eventually came, we didn't come from any of this fluid, lovely football.
He didn't, did it? No, it didn't.
Came from a corner that dropped to the edge of the box and, you know, took a nick off Diego Carlos and went in. So it was, look, Tottenham are a really good side, and they played better than I thought they would, considering the amount of injuries they've got. It was an element, as Kev's already said, the first half, everyone knows this already, the first half we were awful. You know, we just weren't good. We never got out of first gear. The one thing that didn't really falter too much in that first half, however, was, was Emi sort of leading the back line and the defence sort of still running, still giving it a go, giving them issues. Like, they were getting in behind, but we were putting enough pressure on them to make them miss those chances. And it was just, it was just one of those days. It was always going to be difficult. And when they did go 1-0 ahead, if I'm being honest, with the way that we'd been playing and the way they'd been playing, I was like, this is going to be a tough one to come back from, especially with our record of coming from behind to win, let alone away form. It just goes to show you never count out a new Unai Emery side.
Exactly. And George, with regards to kind of that, I guess the wave after wave of attack that Tottenham were operating, again, it's obviously quite difficult to see all the whole game when you're in the stands, but it felt to me like that same kind of feeling away from home. Luiz and Kamara getting slightly overrun in midfield, and almost that weakness that we have, particularly away from home, where we don't necessarily have that physical presence, let's say, that seemed to be at that point kind of causing us real problems. I don't know if that was kind of how you guys were seeing it watching the game.
Yeah, it's exactly how I saw it. I did put it on the group chat at half time, like, we've been bullied, and they were just swarmed us, didn't they? And every 50-50 Spurs were more keen, and they got their foot in, and they were really strong, and we could not get a foot on the ball or any kind of relief in that first half. And it was like, Jesus Christ, you know, if they get another one, even at 1-0, you're like, probably we're in trouble at 1-0, but a second's coming here and we could probably get an absolute hiding. But, you know, fair play to them, mate. They stuck in there today. And I think that's the sign. That's the sign of this new Villa. Like, as you just said, Sam, we've got a bit of everything now. We can kind of mix it up a little bit. We did today, didn't we? Like, I know I don't want to skip too far forward, but we turned that game around today, which is something before. If we get overrun from the first minute, normally you can just write the game off. It's a defeat. But nah, not anymore.
Bit of character.
A bit more in the locker, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Kev, key moment came midway through that first half, and it seems to be garnering a lot of debate on social media. Sam, I'll get your view from Shaz's perspective as well. But Kev, you first. Matty Cash with a late challenge on Bentancur. Obviously got a yellow card. A lot of Spurs fans saying it should have been a red card. Talk Sport were kind of saying it. It could have been. It wasn't a red, but it was a coward's challenge, as Perry Groves put it. To me, it's a yellow card, nothing more. Yeah. Yes, it's sad that the player gets injured, but it's football.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, we've seen some horrendous tackles down the Villa. I always remember that Ben Mee one on Wesley, which effectively ended his top flight career, really, if you think what's happened to him since. I've watched Tucker back a lot of times, obviously, you know, in preparation for this pod. As far as a little bit late at the start, I was watching that tackle back from different angles. He goes for the ball. He's just a bit late. he just swipes his leg, you know, probably a second too late. He goes for it. It's not studs up. He catches him obviously on the legs, but it's just a late. The way they spoke about this in the media, it's like he was like in the stands with a rifle and like took him out. Like the way they were talking about it on the TV, I thought I'd missed something. I thought he'd like sexually assaulted him or something. The way they kept going on about it. It's a fucking tackle, pardon my French. It really pisses me off because the ref didn't give anything that first half. The amount of fouls they were doing, he wasn't giving. And maybe that's my claret tinted glasses on. But like the way it's been described as if Cash is some kind of criminal. Like he's not done a Roy Keane on an Alfie Inge Haaland. He just swiped him from the side, missed the ball by about a second, fouled the player. It's clearly unfortunate he got injured because Bentancur was causing us a lot of problems. His real physicality, Rich, that you and I talk about in that midfield a lot, that we could have done with when we were linked with him. But let's just leave it there. Yeah, maybe an orange card if they introduce that at best. But that'd be it.
Yeah. Like I say, I think it's unfortunate from a Tottenham perspective that it happened to Bentancur. He's been injured previously. He'd just come back. And I do have to feel like that played a part in the reaction to that tackle. As football fans, we all have the biased view. We all have short memories. You know, there was tackles from Romero and I can't remember what the other guy's name in the other Tottenham player's name in the Chelsea game that were far, in my opinion, far worse than that tackle. I mean, that tackle for me happens probably nearly every game from someone. It's late, it's cynical, whatever you want to call it, but that's why they have yellow cards. I'm not, I don't know. Sam, Shaz seemed to be very, very kind of angry about that tackle, but what were your thoughts as well?
I don't know if angry is the right word. I think we were driving back from the game, we went and saw it together, and it just started as a friendly conversation on the way back. I was going through Twitter whilst he was driving, and I was seeing all of the Tottenham comments and really vitriolic stuff towards Matty Cash, by the way. Like a very few.
Some really bad stuff on social media.
Yeah, I think it's worth pointing out that it's a very, very few selection of people who call
themselves of course
fans putting up, you know, like videos of Hitler and sort of taking the mick out of like Cash's ancestry and stuff like that. And I would say if you look in the comments, every single one of them is a Tottenham fan saying you're an absolute disgrace. But they were really upset about it. And so I was talking to Shaz about it. And his opinion basically was, he says, it's one of those. It can be a red. You wouldn't have been, if it had been given as a red, you wouldn't have had it overturned and you wouldn't have complained about it. And he thought it should be a red. Now, I said, no way. I said, there's no way it's a red. I said, it's the definition of a yellow card. It's late. It's reckless. It's a yellow card. You know what I mean? It's not dangerous. The way I saw it, I think the problem is with Cash is he comes across. Mm. So, like, the first contact with Bentancur is on the top of his foot, sort of on the laces. But then as he follows through, his foot kind of turns and it pushes. It's not a red card for me. I don't think it is. The Spurs opinion, and obviously, look, they've got previous with Matty Cash because he did Matt Doherty and a while back as well. So I get it. I get where it's coming from. And I think it's not really worth saying, oh, you know, you have to take it in isolation because you could say, oh, Romero has done worse challenges.
It's in that game.
It doesn't matter as to whether this is a red card or not. I don't think it is. I think it changed the game, though. And I will say this, I think it massively impacted the game. And if it was a tactical one where, you know, obviously it's not in Matty Cash's nature to do this, but imagine if he'd taken Bentancur out intentionally because he was running the game too much. I argue maybe he did one of those, put it on him, let him know early that you're not going away type challenges. And I think it may have just sort of got out of hand. That being said, it was what it was. I said to Shaz, if it was a red, it would have been a red. You know, if it was a red, he would have given it as a red. The ref was at one point. I saw him block off Dougie Louise.
Yeah, he kept doing that. He kept doing it. He kept doing it.
At one point, I was like,
yeah, just then, outside the penalty box. Yeah. He kept being in that position.
Six minutes of added time at the end of the game. 7 minutes on, he's still playing, and he's telling the Spurs fans to get forward, like right in front of me. He's like, "Come on, play the ball." I'm like, "Why are you? What?" I don't think ref was definitely wasn't on our side today. But it was a challenge that I would argue if it happened against a Villa player, we'd all be calling for a red. That's why.
No, I would not be calling for a red card. I'm going to say adamantly now.
Easy to say it now, Kev. Easy
if
to say
catch
now.
Me out on this in the future, like I'm happy for you to use it for me as some kind of like hypocrite, Kev chat. And I know what you mean, Sam, because you get emotional when it's on your side. But I've just watched it back again. It literally since I said it because I had it on a saved late link earlier. Like it catches him on the shin. He's got shin pads on. Like it's not near a knee. It's not near an ankle. It's not. I mean, not that if it was or would have made it any different if he caught him there. But you know, the higher obviously it is, the worse it is. Do you know what I think it is as well? Spurs know, right, that they've got these recent injuries. They've thrown it away at Wolves. They were leading. They've lost to Spurs. They were leading. And they've now played this team that are the closest like to them with swap positions. They're probably getting salty because they know this. Because they didn't Spurs win the league back in October. I thought they'd won the league, hadn't they?
Yeah, I think the problem is, and I said this to Chaz as well. I said if you'd have won the game, no one would have been talking about whether that was a red card or not.
Exactly.
But what I will say as well is, whilst we're on the topic of Matty Cash, I think he sort of showed today why an upgrade is needed. That's for me, if you could pick one position to upgrade in January.
A few people saying it in the chat. Right. Yeah.
You need a player. I'd like to actually see Moreno come back in now at left back and start reintegrating, because Luka Dean's very good in certain games. Some games he's not. I'd like to see that rotation there. But at right back, we need a different option, because if you're pushing Matty Cash out into the right mid or at right back, and then you've got Konsa playing right back, we just got caught out way too many times. And I don't think Cashy's at that level. I know he has sort of good periods, but I think overall, I think you need someone of a higher quality than Matty Cash. George will probably disagree with me, or maybe Kev, but that's
no.
I don't disagree. I don't think in this game he was done many favors by being put in that position today as such. And I'm not absolutely not one to criticize Unai Emery, but I think he was maybe caught by surprise with the way that Tottenham approached it, caught out by that Udogie positioning. And then they were targeting Cash every time we got the ball. There was two or three around him, and obviously then with a Konsa behind him, whose position isn't normally right back, it was just hurting us more and more. So I don't think he was helped by today. But that being said, I do think that, you know, just to add to that quality of the squad, you know, that is certainly an option. And yeah, lots of people are saying it in the chat as well. But having said that, Rich said the first half was a horror show. I don't know how we got out that half level. Let's talk about it, George, because there was two or three incidents that happened after that Cash tackle, because obviously Spurs scored as well. I've missed this off. Watkins then goes up the other end, scores the header. Then it's deemed offside. Obviously was offside. But the time it took for that to come through from VAR and the injury meant that six added minutes of injury time, up steps Luiz with a phenomenal ball in. Pau Torres powers the header home. And we do manage to somehow go in at 1-1, George.
Yeah, oh, it's a weird 5-10 minutes there. Like that first one that got ruled out, you know, everyone's loving life. You're thinking, yes, we're back in this. But I don't know what it is away from home. I'm just waiting every time for a goal to be ruled out. And you're celebrating, you're like, I'm celebrating in vain here. It's going to get ruled out. Next thing you know, checking. It's that checking VAR, isn't it? When they've announced that, you're like, here we go. And yeah, 4 minutes of just like pure confusion. This is what I don't get. We're going to live games. We're paying like decent money to go to these games. And we just sat there like idiots, like waiting for a fucking some geezer in a room to just decide whether you can have a good day or have a shit day. You know, and eventually they ruled it out. I've seen it now. I've seen the stills, you know. What is it? A toe at best, you know.
But I think At the same time, George, it saved us quite a few times today, VAR, with correct decisions. Like, if you take it out completely, we'd have got battered today because we play a very high line. We play, catch people out on the offside. I was obviously there as well, and the four minutes it took to come to a decision, I thought it was absolutely ridiculous. I was like, look, if it takes that long, it's too close to call. And
to me, they're looking for a reason to rule it out.
I think the problem is there's no such thing as level anymore. And you used to have level. You know, the striker and the defender were level. I mean, you don't really get that anymore. It has to be like literally to the hair. And that was the problem they were trying to calculate it.
The clinical one.
Yeah, but at the same time, I can't, you know, I don't want to do this whole poo-poo in VAR thing, because if it wasn't for VAR, with the high line that we play and the amount of people we catch offside, you know,
we've got a point there, to be fair, Sam.
Can I just make a quick point on VAR as well? So I totally agree with Sam, by the way. Like, you know, what goes around comes around. And to be fair, like, Carlos probably would have given a penalty away if VAR had been working early on. But what I don't like about it is this, like, if you're an attacker, you're clearly, you know, on the front foot. So you're facing towards the goal. If you're a defender, you're facing away from the goal. You think about the amount of decisions where it seems to be like a foot or a knee or a shin or whatever, a toe facing, just sneaking out the wrong way of the line. Well, what are they supposed to do? Be flat-footed when they're attacking. But you can't do that. You've got to be on your toes, facing toward, waiting to try and time your run. I just think that the whole rule itself, I would just say the daylight idea, if there's daylight in between, that it gives you a little bit of leniency to the attacker, which all football's about. So if someone's blatantly, like, you know, a yard offside, but if they're just marginally, like, my knee's ahead of your bottom, then let me score the goal. I'm happy for that to go the other way around as well.
Yeah, but
what we concede in, Rich, probably three goals a game, every game, and at least two of them are getting ruled out every time.
Yeah, it's crazy. It leads for heart attacks, I'm telling you. Yeah. It doesn't do me any favours, I'm telling you that right now. But what I was going to say was, Ollie Watkins, does he deserve a wee bit of criticism, Kev, for not holding his line on that? I mean, the ball travels a fair distance. He knows that it's coming in. Like, or is it too? Is that so tight to call?
I feel like I can make 5 points today absolutely rinsing Watkins, and 5 points also absolutely praising him for scoring the winner and everything else that he did. Now, I think it is unfair to say that to him, because if you look at it, he's kind of like level. And if he holds back too much, then we're going...
He doesn't get the header. Yeah.
You know, yeah. I've said this before, Watkins, sometimes. Why is he not on the end of that cross? That if he was on the end of the cross, he'd probably be offside. So.
Yeah. No, I agree. What I was going to say, though, and this to either of you three, is it took them almost as much time to rule in the goal for Pau Torres... as well, and I thought that was like clearly onside. It was like it's about three players playing him on. I felt like
seeing that, Rich. Like I felt like, imagine like a 94-year-old man doing an eye test, like looking at, like, I'm sure there's some letters there somewhere. All I can see on this blurry image is about 10 players like meshed together, and I can just make out Torres, and I know he's at least three players inside with the line of offside. Like, that's a five-second decision at best. Ridiculous.
Oh, Kev, we've lost you when you were in mid... Oh, there you are. You're back.
What did I get to? I wonder why you weren't nodding. I was basically saying I felt like an old man at an eye test, right? Because I just see a melee of, like, bodies in a grainy image meshed together. And the image I could make out of Torres, when he was clearly three or four of those grainy images inside the VAR line, it's a five-second decision. I don't know what they were doing. I mean, like George said before, I think they were looking for a reason to rule it out. As crazy and as conspiratorial as that sounds, like they've got it in for us at Stockley Park.
No, it's not against us. It's for that. It's Big Six bias, mate, and it's real.
Wow. You've only got to look at the game yesterday. I know you're going to get onto this, Rich, but I'm in flow now. Let's have it, right? The Man City-Liverpool game. Oh, can Spurs and Arsenal take advantage of this? Well, one bloody point behind Spurs, and we're playing them the next day. Can Aston Villa take advantage of it as well, you knobheads? Sorry.
Villa are not good for business, boys.
Fourth in the league.
Yeah. I don't know where to go with that. Sam, the obviously, yes, the goal from Torres. I mean, and again, he was excellent, grew into the game as it went on. His passing is, it gives us an extra dimension. How did you feel about that goal? Because you were in the Tottenham end, did you have to sit on your hands for a bit?
I was actually right next to the Villa fans, so I was at the same point of view. Because we had it earlier, obviously. Watkins was disallowed goal, and I kind of had practice. What my tactic was is when we scored, what I would do is I would just like scream an expletive. So it looks like I'm annoyed about it, but really I'm happy about it. But what I ended up doing was I just sort of grabbed Shaheen and shook him.
Would you top middle or the back?
I was right on the bottom, right by the goal.
Same me as well. Far away.
No, I wasn't. I'll talk about the Villa fans later. Just Pau Torres, man. Like I can't. He is just so perfect at what he does, man. He's so good. The way he sort of takes the ball when he's under pressure, especially against a team like Spurs with the high press that they do, and he just deals with it so effortlessly, and he's sort of glides. And I think he left Kulusevski for a hot dog about 7 times, sent him to the shops, and he's just, everything he does is just, everything he just does is brilliant. And now he's added goals to his games. I think he's got a goal more than Marcus Rashford this season. In one less game, he's brilliant, and he's a credit to himself. And I think, do you know what I mean? I made it weird there, George. I wasn't a massive fan of his five at the back. I wasn't a massive fan of him next to Diego Carlos. I would have preferred him next to Conser. I think they've got a really good understanding. And like Diego Carlos seems a bit erratic to me. He's not my favourite player in the world. But when you've got Pau Torres next to you, you just know you can always get the ball out, which was useful.
Yeah. I thought Carlos came into his own a bit towards the end, where it was kind of headers. Yeah.
I think it was when Spurs got knackered. And basically, I'm not even being funny. I think the problem was, and we said this with Shaz when we were on Friday, is Spurs play a very high tempo game, so they always get knackered at about 60 minutes, which is exactly what happened.
Yes, we did. We said that, yeah.
So, it was actually like one of Shaz's observations about his own team is they start high, but they get knackered. And if they're not,
they couldn't carry on at that tempo that they were at. They were like on it, weren't they, the first half?
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
And when the game slowed down a lot, that's when Carlos sort of looked more comfortable. I heard someone talking about his Tom Cruise run. He took very straight hands and he was actually, you know what, here's a question for the chat, another argument Shaz and I were having on the way home. Who would win in a fight, Diego Carlos or Romero? Go on. I want to see the answers in the chat. But
two man mountains.
I think he's I think Carlos is he's got to find his feet, he's find his place. He's either been injured since he's been at Villa, or he's not been playing regularly as well, so it's hard to give him too much stick. But
Weston saying he was surprised that he started Carlos, that is. Dale said Carlos is the polar opposite of Torres. He's a bruiser, old-school defender. Rub says Carlos had a decent game. He had a needed level of physicality. High is not always perceived, maybe. And there's people saying, the rumours are out that Torres is going to one of the so-called big six, but We'll see about that.
Exactly.
That's why I said so-called.
What's the link there, Rich? I've not heard that. Who's linked?
Oh, it's just some rubbish. Torres linked to Man United and Arsenal or something, but it's nothing. Let's keep in the real world here. We talked about kind of the injuries that Spurs had. And the kind of potential of them running out of steam, and what helped them on the way to running out of steam, and also the Bentancur thing was an issue, but also the options on the bench that we had, and the halftime substitutions, George, of bringing on Leon Bailey and Youri Tielemans for Matty Cash and Moussa Diaby, who will come on to Diaby in a bit. There's lots in the chat about him. But that really was the catalyst to spur us on to ultimately go on and win the game.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I don't know. Do you say Emery masterclass? Because he's had to make subs to change the game, but they were the right subs and yeah, it had to be done, didn't it? It wasn't Diaby's day today. It certainly wasn't Matty Cash's day today. You know, he could have been sent off as we previously discussed. But yeah, once we made them changes, we're a different team second half. I was really impressed with the performance. Like I was like on where I was sat, I was on Bailey's side and he was a menace, absolute menace that second half. Mm. You know, obviously we did win the game, but we actually could have won it by more because every time it went down Bailey's side, he was making stuff happen. And the Tottenham defenders were really struggling to try and contain him.
So I've got a question. At what point do we start saying, instead of saying, oh, Unai Emery masterclass because he's made the right subs at the right time, do we start questioning why these players aren't starting?
I don't know, Sam. I don't know about that.
I'm not having a go at Unai Emery. I'm just a question, like, for me, Bailey needs to be starting. I mean, I know the impact he's making off the bench. I understand the argument. But when as good as he's playing at the moment, by the way, Kev, this Bailey is everything that you wanted him to be, everything that you were hoping for him to be last season.
I'm here for it.
Yeah, and the same with Tielemans as well. Just such an impact on the game. But obviously, you know, like Emery dropped Kamara back in between Carlos and Torres and sort of shored that back line. Went to a back six, which was nice. But it worked. But at what point do you think maybe we should start saying, well, you know, why don't we try starting Bailey instead of having these slow starts and changing the game later on? Why don't we try starting Tielemans and so on and so forth?
But I think that's a really good thing because the great thing about the team now is obviously the impact that players are making. You know, look at Duran supposedly throwing his toys out of the pram, whether he did or didn't. But he was doing the back of a couple of good performances, you know, putting a bit of pressure on. And if Bailey and Tielemans are coming on today and doing what they basically did, they did change the game today. Because Tielemans obviously got the assist. I thought Tielemans was splendid in that second half. And Bailey was a constant menace. And it gave us something massive on the transition, as it's now called, in 2023. And that is something which Emery's going to have to look at and go, right, then on the next game, maybe these two don't need to be starting. I think it's a bit early to say it's been like weeks and weeks and weeks of them being so incredible that they need to, that we demand a start. But it's going to keep the players on the toes and you've got to perform. And I love that. You know, you've got to perform. If you want to be, we're a top four team at the moment.
You want a squad, don't you? Everyone pulling in the same direction. You do.
And also, as we've seen today, which is a perfect example, games are won over 90 minutes. And yes, I do think Bailey deserves a start. And lots of people are saying it in the chat, which TQ's saying it. Geordie Villain saying both Tielemans and Bailey play better against tired opposition as well. Jack said he thinks Tielemans will start ahead of Diaby in that false nine. So there's lots of things. But what I think is Emery is slightly different to the previous managers that we've had is you could almost cut and paste the substitutions that were made and the minutes that they were made at. You know, with Emery, he'll make changes at halftime. And that is, I would say, as Sam said, that is an acknowledgement that he probably hasn't made the right choice at the start of the game. So he's done that. And then, you know, he sees how the game's going. And maybe it goes any different. He brings Ramsey on earlier. He brings Duran on earlier. But because we've done what we've done, he's then gone and changed it towards the end of the game. But yeah, I mean, just the ability to have those guys in the side and knocking on the door and really banging on the door is huge, is absolutely huge, and it'll raise the standards of the rest of the team. But yeah, I think the point with the two players, Bailey and Tielemans, is with regards to how Tottenham are playing, it was interesting because they almost left their two centre backs, you know, 1v1 against Diaby and Watkins in that first half, and then they had the same tactics, but because Bailey kept getting it and Tielemans was making late runs, you could see them really stretched, and then that made Udogie have to go back a little bit more, and it just gave them so much more to think about, and then all of a sudden then McGinn's getting more space and he's left one-on-one every time and he can beat the player on that other side. And we gradually just started to take more and more control of that second half. I don't know, again, George, how you felt being in the ground and Sam as well being in the ground, it just seemed like all of a sudden Kamara's picking it up and driving with the ball. Louise was getting the ball 50, and we saw it seemed to be 10, 15 yards further forward when we were picking the ball up. And ultimately, you know, we got the goal on 61 minutes through that gradual control of the game.
Yes, similar to last season. You know, all I ever do when I come on here is bang on about that Spurs away game last season. And it wasn't the same kind of game, but it kind of went the same kind of way, didn't it? Once we rode that early storm for 30, 40 minutes, you know, today we managed to get ourselves a goal just before half time. But we just slowly kind of take over, don't we? And once we got a fucking grip on that game today, I thought the second half was really good. I keep hearing from the Spurs fans, oh, it was a smash and grab, Villa were lucky. You know, I get that from the first half, but second half, I thought we were well worth it, mate.
Mm. Yeah. Sam, Ollie Watkins again frustrates and amazes in equal measure. Beautiful bit of football. I think it's Kamara into Watkins, lays it off to Tielemans, carries on his run. Tielemans plays him through. A quick first touch, takes the shot early. Beautiful finish. And yeah, cue wild scenes in the away end / slightly home end of the Tottenham stand.
Yeah, I think Ollie Watkins, you know what? He may be the perfect striker for Villa. Because I think his game was synonymous with the Villa game today. Crap for most of it, but got the glory in the end. I mean, he did very little, Watkins, apart from get the winner, which is what the most important thing is. Like, at the end of the day, what do you want from him? I thought he was poor. His first touch let him down loads of times in the box. I don't think his positioning was great. He wasn't holding the ball up very well. He was pretty absent in the first half, but in that latter stage in the second half, you know, the ball comes through to him, lovely ball through by Tielemans, and you know, he's got to take his chance, and he does. And this is after missing other chances as well. But you know, I think, look, what you want from Ollie Watkins is to put himself about, be in the right place at the right time and take some of his chances. He was unfortunate to get given the first goal as offside. And then, you know, he ends up getting the winner. You know, I don't think you can ask much more from him, if I'm being honest. I quite agree with that. Mr. Sit, score a good goal. It's Ollie Watkins in a nutshell. I've said this a billion times. He always misses the easy ones, and he always scores the hard ones, so that the harder chances to get. But, I mean, look, the form that Ollie Watkins is in right now, I knew it would come. I said it would come. The question is, how long does it last? And then what does Ollie Watkins look like after? But right now, the football that he's playing has contributed massively to us being fourth in the table, joint third, 2 points off top. So I'm not about to sit here after a performance, a result like that. I wouldn't say performance, like a result like that, and criticise anyone in the team. Fair play to Watkins. He did his job, and we go back with another 3 points.
Absolutely. Kev, just sum it up, your thoughts on that, because great goal. And then beyond that, I thought we took control of the game. Spurs, it was so crazy to see the drop-off. I know they didn't have great players to bring off the bench, but that drop-off in terms of intensity towards the end of the game was just frightening on their perspective. And we could have probably got more goals.
Yeah, absolutely. And that says a lot about a good team, because, you know, it's rare you see, I don't know, like, you know, you could have a situation where a Bournemouth or, you know, or a Fulham get out of the blocks against a team. It's very rare they're still dominating that team late on. And then you know, it flips the other way around. So, look, on the Watkins situation, first of all, he could have had four goals today. I mean, the offside for VAR was questionable, but he had two headers. I think he should have done better with both of them, really. You know, I know that one went narrowly wide, and there was one where he hit it against the defender. Should have got a corner, I think, but should really have scored. So, but you don't mind if he scores the difference goal in a 2-1 away win at Spurs, then absolutely fantastic. But we know what we are. We're at with Watkins now. We know we have to, I feel, get a supplementary striking option in January, and that might be for another pod to discuss that in a bit more detail. We've discussed it, to be fair, on a few of the fans' forums, etc. But I think we know about that. in terms of the rest of the second half, yeah, I mean, it could have been 5-6-7 in the end for Villa, but then they probably argue they could have had 5-6-7. I think both teams have had 15-plus shots. And they probably had the first half, and we probably had more of the second half. Although Martinez did make some absolutely unbelievable saves.
Yeah, well, he did.
He did today, boys. So good.
Yeah, he was a true, what? I mean, you're talking goalkeepers, you know, what we talked to Ollie Watkins winning us the game, but you're talking goalkeepers getting your points. And those two saves from Brennan Johnson and then Højbjerg were just phenomenal. And you see him claiming crosses at the end as well. But like you talk about goalkeepers winning you however many points per season. And that double save certainly got us the extra 2 points there because it was just brilliant.
Yeah, I think he's the best in the world. Not everything, but at most certainly one-on-ones. When someone's driving at him one-on-one in terms of making himself big, closing the angle, cutting off the space, he's the best in the world at what he does.
It reminds me of Peter Schmeichel when he does that.
Yeah. quite similar to Peter Schmeichel. And I think, you know, you've seen it from the World Cup final to multiple games with Villa, where I'd say every week, they're one-on-one and he makes himself big and he makes the same save, and people just don't have to get around him because he's still on his feet. So you can't drop your shoulder and go around because he'll go with you. He's honestly, a couple of times this season, we've talked about, you know, like the dramatic dives and the ones he maybe could have saved. But today he was flawless. Like, I think everyone could tell that they couldn't mess around. I don't remember seeing anyone apart from Bailey doing his tricks, which came off and they just looked fun. I don't remember anyone messing around today. Martinez certainly didn't mess around.
Cash messed around a few times in the first half.
Yeah, but Cash was playing his own game. He wasn't even playing his own game. Well. But Martinez, there's a reason that he's got that award, the Ashton Trophy, and reason that everyone that says he's the best in the world, because especially days like today, he is. I can't think of a better goalkeeper.
That save from Højbjerg. Wow.
Oh, it gets better every time you see it. Wow. Yeah.
Is that the one he took down the post?
Yeah. Full stretch.
Yeah.
All
yeah.
stretch. Brilliant.
Yeah.
But the one-on-one before that's even harder.
Yeah.
I know I said it on the group chat earlier, boys. He's just a mentality monster, isn't he?
Yeah.
You look at him and you're like, I believe in you, Emmy. You know, you are just a bollocks, mate. He gives you that look, like, I'm not conceding today, lads. And everyone's like, yep. He's right. He ain't conceding today.
George
is great.
He's a goalkeeper, right? His hands must be worth $1 million. And he's putting his hands in front of Brazilian police batons. Like, that's how much of a mentality
monster.
That's
the mentality,
He's like, yeah, just break my hands with your batons, lads. Don't worry about it. As long as we save the fans. He just doesn't give two hoops, does he?
No, 100%. And I'll tell you what, Rich, I've decided now, over 30 years of supporting Villa, I've always been Bosnich is the best keeper we've ever had. I'm now saying Emi Martinez is the best goalkeeper we've ever had in my life, mate. He is brilliant.
We'll get Max to clip that up and see if everyone agrees with you.
Mark Bosnich follows me on Twitter as well. I'm gonna retweet it.
He'll be happy about it, man.
Hot take, Hylas. And I'm conscious that Match of the Day 2 is on, and we do want to get and watch that. I've got it on record, but
we won't be on until 11:30.
Yeah, that's true. We've got nearly 100 people watching as well. I did tweet out we only had 37 likes, so guys, smash the like button, subscribe if you're new to the channel. Wonderful numbers watching us, but we want to keep growing. Kev, though, to come to you first. Emmy, man of the match, would you say?
Yeah, I think he's got to be, really. I kept seeing the game a number of times. I think in the first half, there wasn't many good things to show. I think on reflection of the second half, once I've sort of seen the whole game, I think Kamara had quite a good game from what I can think in midfield. McGinn really came into it second half. I thought McGinn was probably tipping, sort of getting close to Emmy for man of the match in terms of just overall influence.
He got man of the match, by the way, Kev. What? John McGinn,
I know he got it. I'm just saying.
He subbed at half time again. He really did turn that game around today in the second half.
Yeah.
His first half, I thought he struggled.
Yeah,
Højbjerg was a real problem for McGinn. Like, he matches McGinn in terms of his stature, his size, his fact that he's quite aggressive. He couldn't turn him. When Bentancur went off and Højbjerg came on, that was actually a massive problem for McGinn. He found it really difficult to deal with him. And what he did in the second half is he went on the other side and got away from Højbjerg, because Højbjerg was just, if the Spurs fans will talk about the game changing with Bentancur going off, but Højbjerg coming on, he was no pushover in midfield, I'll tell you that.
Oh, he always has a good game against McGinn.
Always, yeah.
Yeah.
Although he should have got a couple of fouls, shouldn't he, McGinn? I think there's a couple of times he went through the back of
Gary says Torres close second.
Yeah, Torres.
I think Torres was man of the match, by the way. He's my man of the match.
Yeah. 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 I think he got it on FOTMOB, Torres, highest rating. Luis got better as the game went on as well.
We're going to talk about Diaby, Rich.
We have to. Yeah. So, I've started a few comments around Diaby. Duncan said he's a right winger, not a number 10. Is it about time that Jordy Villain said he stopped shooting for some reason, hopes he gets himself right soon. Gary said he's more worried about Diaby than Watkins. His form has dropped off a cliff. There was a moment in that first half, Sam, where the ball literally went through to him. All he needs to do is curl it with his left foot. It was literally in his path. And I don't know what he does. He tries to like cut back and then he gets tackled. And then we end up almost go on an attack. And it's like that could have been a shot on target. I don't understand what he's doing or not doing at the minute.
I think with Diaby, I'm sure everyone saw the clip that Villa released of his goal in the training session earlier this week. I don't think he's lost confidence, because that would be the first thing. Oh, he's shot of confidence. He doesn't know what he's doing. I think he's not loving this position that he's playing in. I feel like he's overthinking it. He's not making the right decisions. He's not being stifled with his creativity, but I think he's not playing the kind of football he wants. I can't remember the last time I saw Diaby just get the ball, turn and run at a man and sort of take a player on. He's all sort of looking to get in behind or link up with Watkins. And I don't know. It's whatever it is that's going on with him, it's not working. So my instinct is to take him off and start someone else and let him take the spotlight away from him a little bit. And then let him ease his way back in. Maybe swap him and Bailey. Now Bailey's in form. Let Diaby come off the bench. Because everyone says, Bailey coming off the bench is such a good option because everyone's knackered and he's so quick. The same applies if you bring Bailey on. It doesn't make a difference which one you bring on. So maybe swap him around for a couple of games.
Yeah. Kev, are you thinking that maybe Diaby needs a little, whether it's a kick up the backside, whether it's a little bit of a rest and kind of see, and then like you say, he comes on when the opposition's a little bit tired and maybe he gets a bit more space. Are you agreeing with that?
Yeah, I think I'd call it a rest for me. I mean, not many players come to the Premier League, and even players that have gone to teams that win the league. Look at Grealish's first season at Man City. It's very rare a player comes in and does what Haaland does straight away, particularly for a lower ranked team. Tielemans, there were people writing him off 3 or 4 weeks ago. Look at him now, like people are demanding he starts. He's saying he changed the game today. People saying he was man of the match. So goes to show what can change. And the thing is with Villa now, we're not just, even though he doesn't make many changes, we're not just the first 11 team. And with Ramsey back to fitness, I mean, if that gives you another option there in terms of one of those roles. You've got Zaniolo, obviously, who's not shown his full potential, I think, in an Aston Villa shirt, but can do that. So why not give him a little rest? Let's see what happens, obviously, against the in the European game in midweek. Maybe he might leave him out for that. If he brings him on with 20 minutes to go, he gets a goal, maybe that reignites him. But probably the time is now to give Bailey a start, give Ramsey a start, and bring him off the bench for a couple of games.
Okay, can I just respond to that quote, that comment by Dale? No one's scapegoat. I mean, I don't know if people are online, but in this pod, I will happily speak for everyone here. No one's scapegoating Diaby. I think we're just observing that he's maybe not in the best run of form, and taking him out of the spotlight might be beneficial for him for a little bit.
Yeah, I think Dale means online, I think.
Yeah, I don't think Dale does.
Yeah.
I just think Tottenham, big physical team, especially today, and Diaby's quite slight, isn't he? Small, and they just kick the shit out of him. Simple as that.
Yeah, but I just think he's not necessarily taking the best position. He's not receiving the ball on the half turn. He's sometimes receiving it like he's back to goal, which is always going to be difficult for him. But yeah, I mean, look, I'm sure he'll come back firing. And also, what is so good, and I keep repeating this, and I will keep repeating this, is that we have options. We have a Bailey, we have a Tielemans, we have Watkins, we have Ramsey coming back, we have McGinn who can score goals, we have Louise who can score goals. So if we're not reliant on one player to do everything for us like we have in previous years, now we have so many players who can win the game for us or score a goal for us, that it's so great, it's so brilliant to witness, because it's great that, you know, if Diaby isn't playing brilliantly, then you've got a Leon Bailey to come on and change the game, or a Tielemans to come on and change the game. And it will equally be the same in I'm sure, in 10, 15 games' time, if Bailey or Tielemans aren't playing brilliant and Diaby's the one who wins the game for you. That's how it works. That's what having a squad's all about. So,
Rich,
yeah, it's
just going to say, you know what, as well, I was thinking, this might be like, you know, kind of recency bias because you haven't seen him for a bit, but I was thinking how much, like, I'd love to have, like, a Buendia coming off the bench as well. And like,
I hear that, Kev.
Yeah, like, you know, like a little sort of tigerish, sort of like tenacious player, eye for a great through ball. I really think as Villa have got better, I think he's the kind of player that would really flourish, particularly, you know.
You're forgetting that Rich's player that he always picks on is Buendia.
I know.
You're out of order there, son.
Yeah, yeah. I've just seen what's happened with Bailey. Diaby almost reminds me a bit of a Bailey a few months back.
Oh, like, bloody hell. Don't you start, Kev. You pipe down. Leave him alone.
No, but I mean, on the confidence on the ball, when he's getting the ball, he doesn't look like he feels like he knows what he's going to do with it. And I remember thinking about Bailey. Bailey now, everyone knows that now, but we're all saying, I think, the same thing. Like, we're demanding he comes on. We want him to come on. And he looks like he's at it. Even if he does have a speculative shot that goes nowhere or he overhits a pass, he's a real menace. Diaby was a menace at first. And I think he needs to get back
to that.
More of an instinctive game, basically, from Diaby. A bit more instinctive.
Absolutely. I just want to finish up the show, lads, with this. Let's just bask in the glory. Top four, lads. Top four. Joint best form over the last five games with Manchester United. But 2 points off top. I mean, we don't want to get carried away, but how good is it to see us in this position?
Do you know what? It's just 2 points off top, level joint third, second most goals scored in the league. Look at that form. 13 Premier League home wins in a row, 16 Premier League and Europa Conference League wins in a row. I'll say this every time I get onto the podcast. Are you not entertained? How dare you complain? It's really funny because I was looking through our in the car on the way back, our fixtures, and, you know, we're trying to pick out what the hard part of the season is going to be. And do you know what I said? I said, do you know what? It's very rare that this happens. I'm just going to enjoy it. I don't even care what the next game is. We're top four. It's November. We can't even look at the table now, but just enjoy it. It's just a great time to be a Villa fan. And, you know, we haven't had a lot of periods of time like this where we were so dominant and we were, you know, everyone's talking about Villa and...
No one's talking about Villa. We're the only ones talking about Villa.
No. We're everywhere now, Kev. We even got Mark Goldbridge finally admitting that Unai Emery's the third best manager in the league. You know, whatever it is. But Villa are on people's radar. But more importantly, I think we as fans, since we went down, since we got relegated, since Remy Gard and Gerard Houllier, I think we deserve a season like this, for sticking by the boys and going through the championship and the playoff final loss. And this is our time. This is what the owner said they were going to deliver. And this is what we asked for. This is everything that we dreamed of. So let's just enjoy it.
If we beat Forest, we'd be top of the league.
Oh, shut up, Kev. You couldn't leave Sam on that positive note, could you?
And also, just for the record, we are, after 13 games, we are 23 points safe of relegation. So
I looked at it earlier, Sam, the same. I was like,
yeah, enjoy it, guys. Enjoy it, everyone in chat, every Villa fan. There's not much else to say. It's just perfect.
Absolutely. What a way to end it. Look, guys, Thank you so much. Over 100 people watching tonight. Absolutely amazing stuff. Hit that like button on your way out. Hit the subscribe button if you are new to the channel. We've got loads of content to come for you this week. Talking Tactics, I'm sure, with Gareth is one not to be missed. So make sure you have your notifications on for when that's coming. Fans Forum tomorrow, 10 p.m. Make sure you're there. We'll talk all things the game, where we are in the league, Villa, Aston Villa women's team, transfers, all your questions answered, so get involved in that. And yes, match previews for Legia Warsaw, match reactions. It's going to be a busy old week, so make sure you're on with the channel. Lads, thank you so much. Let's get and watch Match of the Day and bask in the glory of today's victory. Thank you all for watching, and as always, remember, we all follow the Villa. Thanks, everyone.
Up and running.